Well, good evening, gang, and welcome to Now and Then with Glenn. Glenn Williams here coming to you from WBCA 102.9 on your FM dial. Right here in Boston, Boston Neighborhood Network. We like to come to you and talk about, you know, some groovy things that are happening around the community. And today is no exception. I'm really, really excited to have people from Code Squad in the studio today. We're here with Andrew Ott. Hello, Andrew. How are you?
Hi there, Glenn. Good morning. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Thank you very much for being here with us. And Michelle Von Volger. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Right, just talking to the microphone. It'll be great. There you go. Thank you very much for coming in this morning and spending some time with us. You know, there's always this, we talk about coding, and it's a big computer word that people kind of sometimes go, you know, what is that all about? Why are we, it's a behind the scenes, very behind the scenes technique and thing that has to happen. Andrew, tell me a little bit about what's coding?
Coding is one of those catch-all words that mystifies people and also makes some people a lot of money.
I'm sure.
It's kind of a catch-all term for software development as a whole. Mm-hmm. We think of it in terms of very specifically web development, which is, we think, kind of a great entree to software development as a career. We talk about specific languages like JavaScript or HTML or CSS mm-hmm. or Node, or there are other ones on the back end of the sort of server-side development. Mm-hmm. But coding, I think, is a general term that I think gets thrown around so often that it loses a little bit of its meaning.
Right. Can I be as basic as saying that the series of numbers and letters that get programmed into a, I guess, the computer someplace will determine the color of the background of the website.
Absolutely, yeah. Sorry, that's a great way to put it. We, you know, we say coding, and really at the very basic level, it's the ones and zeros, right? It's the little digital stream of data that makes anything happen on a computer.
Right.
And it actually takes place at a number of different levels, whether you're talking about something very basic to the computer, which is like an operating system or the bits that get sent over a wire.
Mm-hmm.
But it also happens at a higher level where different types of programmers or different types of IT professionals would work with it. And there is coding that deals with databases where data is stored. There's coding that deals with transporting data across networks, which mm-hmm. some people are specialized in, other people have no knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
There's the coding that we work with, for example, which is to design a web page or to structure a web page and make it interactive and make it beautifully designed. On your phone there would be similar coding, but yet of a different flavor, like a different language, we say.
Right. Michelle, thank you for being here. I appreciate having you in. You and I have a history of being able to sit in local coffee shops and have political conversations left and right. It's always a pleasure.
Pleasure's mine.
Glad to have you here with me today. To me, coding has always been this, like, you know, you got to be this guru of the web world and stuff like that. And my limited amount of knowledge was having to pass a course at Purdue to get my master's, you know, just one kind of course. And that, so that's kind of like my limited thing, but I would never consider myself a programmer. Let's talk a little bit about who gets to do this kind of thing.
Anyone who has the interest and the desire to learn and to do it, mm-hmm. it's open. The great part about coding is that it crosses all boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If you have the desire to learn, you put it in action, you'll learn it.
Yeah.
And you actually produce something. You produce a body of work. And it's not immediate as in 20, you know, 2 minutes, but it's immediate in the sense that you created it and it's there.
Mm.
And if you have the patience and understand that you'll have ups and downs, like anything that you're learning, anybody can learn this.
Right. My bride is an incredible computer person as far as marketing and in designing computers, computer websites, and making sure everybody's got the right information and all that jazz and stuff. But she's accidentally clicked on something on the website that brings up this page with all this, how did she call it? Gobbledygook. Have you ever heard that description before?
We use it.
I hope it's in the curriculum. If it's not, I want credit.
It is. Sorry, it's already taken.
Okay. But it looks daunting. It looks like it's this something thing that just, but I think it must be just as basic as understanding what it is.
Just like if you've ever learned a foreign language.
Yeah.
Or if you speak another language besides English, for example, you talk to someone who isn't familiar with those codes, right? Those letters and that combination of words, and it seems impenetrable to them.
Or the structure.
Right.
And just like grammar in any language, there's a structure.
Mm-hmm.
And once you understand what that structure is, then you begin to understand how it flows.
The larger purpose, what it's doing.
Exactly. Mm.
Does this date back to like the Jobs of the day? You know, the Steve Jobs, those cats trying to get their newfangled machines to work and to communicate with each other and stuff?
Sure. It goes further back than them.
Really?
Back into the days of IBM and COBOL and Hewlett and Packard started their business in 1928.
Oh, my Lord. Okay.
And so it goes way back.
Mm.
It started with military applications and then slowly spread to more uses. Steve Jobs and, you know, Bill Gates and that group, their real contribution was democratizing it in some ways.
Okay.
They brought it out to be personal computers so we could each have a computer.
Right, right.
Because before them, only companies and big institutions would have computers.
Right. Big rooms full of them.
Exactly.
To get one kind of message out.
That's right.
Punch holes.
Yep. You can go over to that Harvard University in Cambridge. They have a big old Mark IV or something like that. It's a dramatic thing. It fills up, huge room.
Humming away. One of the things that I want to talk about is it says on your website that Code Squad is a nonprofit organization that trains talented adults from Boston's urban core to become full-stack web developers. Now, you're a nonprofit. Andrew, tell me a little bit about the history of Code Squad and how it came about to be in your target.
Sure. We are a 501c3. We've been around for about 3 years. We've completed two cohorts of students. The genesis for Code Squad was really, certainly on a personal level, in my own career, I sort of taught myself web development at one point, and it was really pivotal for me. I had been doing cold calling, research phone calls, and once I learned how to do web development, suddenly I could do much more interesting, much more valuable, much more creative work and had a lot more control over my own career. And suddenly I was in demand in a way that I never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up working at Year Up, which is an organization in Boston which does great work with workforce development, training people, young people of color from sort of disadvantaged backgrounds to become more economically stable.
Mm-hmm.
And I became a mentor there for a couple of years. And I always asked them, well, why can't we do a web development or a software mentorship? Why can't I mentor people in software? Because I think that's where there's a huge, not to say other areas aren't important, but this is an area where I have expertise or, you know, some experience. And I also think that it's has the potential to keep people employed in a very wonderful career path for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, there really wasn't anything like that in the city. So I happen to have some training in nonprofit management and some connections in the tech scene and in the education world in Boston. And ultimately, I thought I would try it. And we had a bunch of volunteers, probably have 60 or 70 volunteers who were IT executives, or who are programmers or, you know, freelance web developers. And they were all very enthusiastic about it. What's more, I talked to us as a group talked to folks who are hiring. You know, they said, you know, we would love to have an organization where it would be a source of entry level talent for us, specifically people of color, women, people who are not normally in our recruiting pool. That would be a huge benefit to Boston area businesses because not only do we need just people because we're short on talent. You might not know this, but a couple years ago, Boston Foundation and Skillworks did a great study where they found that for every 17 openings, job openings in IT in Greater Boston, there was only one qualified candidate.
No kidding.
Only one for 17.
Out of Boston?
Out of Boston.
We are very short on talent in certain subsections. You know, it might be that there are some things that are probably are oversubscribed, but then there are other areas where there's no one. And in programming, as a broad category, software programming, web development in particular, there's a huge gap, huge need for people. And you may not know this, but Boston is, I think, we're roughly the third tech hub in the United States after Silicon Valley, New York.
That's right.
You also could, I believe it's the number third highest growing percentage of tech jobs out of overall jobs in the city.
Yes.
Like tech jobs in the city are growing by maybe 6% or 6% something like that, which is much more.
From 2017 to 2018.
Is that right? It's a large and growing sector in Boston. It's also true nationwide. It's also true worldwide. But in Boston, we specifically have this problem where the companies need more people.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something very interesting before we got started was the logistics between one of the most active technological areas available to us, right over in Cambridge, and an area right here in Boston where the need for people to learn and to get those kind of positions just across the river.
That's right.
Is staggering.
Mm-hmm. We sometimes talk about almost like two different universes, two different planets, and you travel from say Dudley Square to Kendall Square in Cambridge, and the appreciation for what is needed is totally different.
Yeah.
In Kendall Square, if you talk to the organizations over there, they say there might be 1,000 startups. I think that's probably an overinflated number, but there's a huge amount of money flowing into new businesses. Biotechnology is actually the largest the deal flow in Boston is larger than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah.
And then, as we just said, sort of internet technology is very, very strong as well. Then you come, as you say, across the river, and you've got a joblessness rate which is probably three times the national average here in some of the neighborhoods in Boston. So it's not that far away, and yet it's so far away.
Right. Is your target demographic the inner city of Boston?
We're open to anyone.
Okay.
But we do target people of color, women, non-binary people. We talk to folks from disadvantaged backgrounds who have struggled with various challenges in their life, and we try and bring them up into this workforce. Right now, the tech workforce is 95% white.
Yes.
So blacks and Latinos, for example, and people of color represent about 5% of the total tech workforce.
That doesn't seem right.
That doesn't seem right, especially when it's so well paid, so highly remunerated. The male-female ratio is about 76% male.
Right.
So it's a huge disproportionate. There's a hugely disproportionate, the demographics are way out of balance.
So the divide is very vast for a 2.5 mile distance from, let's say, Dudley to Kenmore Square. The divide is vast.
That's amazing.
And so what Andrew tried to do was create a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Michelle, what brought you to Code Squad? Have you been?
So I'm actually an alumna from 2018.
Oh, really?
Yes.
She's one of our stars.
Thank you. But, I have to say that I was very lucky to find Andrew because I stumbled into web development.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the communications departments for two research institutes, as you know, and doing their websites, doing the content of their websites, I realized I needed something done. I needed a drop-down menu.
Yeah.
It all started with a drop-down menu. And I went online and I figured it out, and then I didn't know how to connect it to the other pages that I needed to, basically to the back end.
Yeah.
So once I figured out the front end of it, I then ran down to the computer science department and found a student to help me.
But this is a great story. Michelle's story is spot on. There. All it takes is that first time where you're trying to noodle something apart, take something apart and understand how to put it back together.
Yeah.
It's just like it's problem solving, right? It's basic finding a challenge, often in a website design, and then trying to say, how can I fix that?
Right.
Do I have to wait 6 weeks and get somebody from IT or somebody, hire some person on the internet to do this for me, or can I figure it out myself?
Right.
And Michelle was able to figure that out herself and eventually get help, but that's true for everyone.
There's all these organizations and companies that kind of design your own website, stuff like that. Is the limitations that they have something that will enable somebody who's following in the great Michelle's footsteps to kind of be able to jump into the back end there and kind of be a little more original, or do you need to start from scratch?
It's a great question. I would say both.
Yeah. Okay.
some of these website design companies have done amazing work. They've made it. They've sort of demystified a lot of the basic website creation process. And with you know, clicking and dragging, you can make a beautiful looking website. You do have to follow their templates.
Yeah. Yeah.
You do have to stay within the guidelines that they create. So mm-hmm. at somewhere at their company headquarters, wherever they are, or wherever the designers are working, there are designers saying, okay, these are the 16 ways you'll be able to design your website. That's yeah. not how they pitch it online, right? When you're signing up for the membership or whatever it is, you know, they don't pitch it that way. They don't say, well, you have to do within these guidelines. But there are structures that you have to stay within. Usually, for a huge percentage of people who do it, it's fine. It's yeah. not at all a constraint. However, once you want that website to grow beyond a certain point, beyond a certain number of users, or start to do design features that are a little bit out of the ordinary,
yes.
maybe, you want more data coming in from the outside. You know, maybe you don't just want a regular Facebook feed mm-hmm. of all of the comments on your Facebook account, but maybe you want, I don't know, to search all the Facebook feeds for, you know, a certain topic across the internet and you want it updated at a certain rate of speed or something. Suddenly you have to really go back. You have to go back and you need to change your connections, and sometimes you need to completely rebuild the website. You also can't leave those websites. Once you are on one, they make it very hard, and I believe it's intentionally, they make it the switching costs very hard, so they don't want you to leave.
You actually can't really transfer your data easily at all. You can't download the template into a USB drive and take it with you right. to a different hosting company.
Well, that's all great.
That's ironic. I'm sorry. I'm going to cut you off. But the ironic thing about that is the internet was designed to be interoperable. So if you look at the basic, the technology or the code that you're generating when you build those through those website creator programs, the basic code that actually achieves what you're trying to achieve is so simple and so easy to transport. But yeah. what they do is they intentionally complicate it.
Well, I can see where those kinds of services are great for small nonprofit that mm-hmm. has to put their website together, or a rock band that wants to get their music out there, or something, they can make their own website, and it always says at the end .. so and so. But you're talking about careers here, right?
That's right.
Okay, you know what we're going to do is we're going to take a small break here just to say, make sure that we let everybody know who we are and what we're doing. You're listening to Now and Then with Glenn. My name is Glenn Williams. We have the great people from Code Squad in the studio with us tonight. Listen, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a couple of seconds. Please do not go away.
Hi, I'm Danica Patrick. Watching my nieces grow, play, and learn is amazing, but not every child gets to be carefree. 1 in 6 kids in the U.S. are hungry. This breaks my heart, and it's something that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and gives it to families in need. To help, visit feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Here we are. Yes. Now and Then with Glenn. You're listening to WBCA 102.9 on your FM dial, Boston's community radio station. Thank you. We're in with Andrew Ott and Michelle Von Vogler. Von Vogler. I don't know why I stumble over that.
Everybody does.
Well, you know, I'm supposed to be the one that doesn't stumble over that, but that's okay. One of the things that you do talk about is that you help the students that kind of go through your program with placement. Mm-hmm. That there's, you talked earlier about the overwhelming amount of positions that are available, or in companies in need of people that have been trained in the programs that you're doing. How does that work? How do we develop a relationship with some of these? And I'm assuming it's not just Boston-based or Cambridge-based companies. I mean, they're all over the place, aren't they?
They are all over the place. At the moment, we focus on companies that are in the greater Boston area. And in fact, there's such a universe of companies here locally that we have more than enough opportunities, you know, potential partnerships. After the initial training takes place, which is it's 18-week program.
Yeah.
It's an intensive program, about 13 hours a week in class and about 4 hours a week of homework. After that classroom portion, the graduates move into a job placement portion of the program. Mm-hmm. And we work with them to identify as many networking and job placement opportunities as we can. We always want to do more on that front. There's a lot we could be, you know, there's a lot that remains to be developed. But I'm super excited. We've got Michelle is new to the team. We've got another person who just got joined the team as well as a project coordinator. So we're super excited that the placement part is growing. But essentially it happens, we develop partnerships with usually individual champions at companies, and we slowly find the sections of the companies that need our grads, because we know they're out there, we know this need is there, but nonetheless, it takes time to identify the right fit.
Right. Now, we all know what Assumption can do. Is this an online service, or is this someplace people go and they actually sit down?
Oh, no, this is very much in person. This is very much person-to-person, you know, handshakes and getting to know people on an individual level. That might take the form of individual career coaching. So sitting down and talking, you know, what am I going to do with this? I have these skills now, and I have this interest in this, but I don't think I can connect them. And often there are ways that the grad doesn't see right away that you can connect them. You can be really creative, for example. You can work as a freelancer and have a very flexible work schedule, which is great, for example, for parents or for people who have a lot of, you know, other folks they need to take care of. Or you can aim straight at the corporate job market, which is much more of a, you know, that's a great, has much more stable benefits and things like that. So there's a real benefit there. But it's...
Where are you located?
We're at Lena Park Community Development Corporation, is our major partner. And they, one of their big contributions, they do a number of contributions to the program, but they are, they provide a wonderful tech center and a computer lab there. And what's great is that they have a great number of complementary programming programs
innovation
in STEM.
Lab.
They have an innovation program. They actually have they have youth coding. They have the Fab Lab, which is the state-of-the-art fabrication makerspace.
Amazing.
Really?
It's really wonderful. They have they have dedicated staff just for that. They also have what they call their community outreach team, which works closely with not just Code Squad students, but also members of Lena Park's broader community to get past some barriers, whether it's, you lose your housing, you lose your job, you lose your childcare. You can run into a number of barriers, and they're expert. They can't solve all problems right away, but they have a lot of expertise in
just
navigating.
But they do a great job in
navigating.
Trying to tackle these
things. And for us, it's so great because that's not a core competence of Code Squad. And so we partner with Lena Park on one of their core competencies, which is really helping people navigate some of these barriers and keeping them in class.
But I think it's also important to say that Code Squad is located in the community that it wants to service.
Okay.
So it's not located in downtown Boston like many other boot camps, private boot camps. Code Squad is targeting the communities of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's located in the heart of a really fantastic organization. In a community that is predominantly people of color.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not inaccessible as some other places may be.
Right, right. Michelle, talk about, in the last couple of minutes that we have, can you talk a little bit about that initial kind of getting there and recognizing that it was something that you wanted to... I'd be terrified.
A journey.
But you know what I mean? I mean, it would be a scary situation to be kind of coming in into this, oh my goodness, the actual background, the back door of how websites are done and how the internet works and all of that jazz. Talk a little bit about that experience and how it was for you to go in there.
So I'm a career changer. And as you know, my background is in public service.
Yep.
I worked for many years as a senator's aide, and then I worked in policy work with the treasurer, and then in a couple of nonprofits in higher ed. So I wasn't really sure that I could do it. I actually was really intimidated by it, and I don't have a technical background.
You don't appear to be the intimidating type of person.
Oh, well, you know, I saw all of those symbols and carrots, I said to myself, oh, my God.
Never happened.
That gooblygoo that you were talking about. I was like, oh, my God, that's soup.
Yes, it is.
But then, again, when I was faced with this issue that I needed to have solved, because I was using one of those templates. It was not one of the popular ones, but it was one that major institutions use. And it took me a bit to find the information that I needed. And then I said to myself, okay, this is not that difficult. And as time progressed, I taught myself a little bit more here and a little bit more there. And then I wanted to know more. And I felt very overwhelmed with all of a sudden my feeds started popping up with different online programs. And it just got really overwhelming. Yeah. So I went on a search and I met with Andrew. And I was really lucky because I felt like this was the universe telling me that this is what I'm supposed to be doing.
That's great.
And then when I actually entered it, I was intimidated just like anybody else is. But if you want to solve a problem and if your personality is to resolve something, mm-hmm. is to find a solution, mm-hmm. even if you're an artist, we have an orchestra cellist that is an amazing coder. We call him the professor. Anyone who is looking at the world and wanting to resolve or create a solution to a problem, I think would do very well in something like this and who's willing to work at it.
And it also sounds like the people that they run into and interact with at Code Squad are willing and extremely able to comfort people and bring them to a state where, yeah, I can do this too.
But we're also a community, the Code Squad group, the alumni, we're a very supportive community in and of ourselves with each other.
Yeah, I would
say
actually one of Michelle's great contributions to Code Squad has been the development of that community because there is, as I mentioned, there are the staff at Lena Park who are sort of professionals at helping people with specific problems. But what I'm most proud of in terms of the organization is the sort of esprit de corps or the morale that the group together hangs together to learn coding as a group and stays together as a team and roots for each other in terms of their, you know, career ups and downs.
Yes. We're very supportive of each other.
In something like coding where what we call imposter syndrome, it's not unique to code, to the coding industry, but it's definitely very virulent when you're learning something as complex as code. And that's true for anybody, no matter where you're from.
Yes.
Andrew, what's the website? What's the website?
It's codesquad.org.
Codesquad.org. We're going to take a real quick break for an ID, and then we'll come back and say goodbye, okay?
Thank you.
Listen, you're listening to Now and Then with Glenn. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
Diane's got a message for you.
Hi, I'm Diane Stern, and you're listening to WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston's community radio station.
Thank you, Diane Stern. We're back with Now and Then with Glenn. Listen, guys, thank you, Michelle, Andrew. Thank you so much for being here with us this evening. It's an important message, I think, that people get an understanding of how this works. I'd love to invite you cats to come back. And if there's a possibility to maybe even host your own show here, you know, and talk a little bit about what your nonprofit's doing, tell us a little bit, you know, get a little bit more into it. You know, I think that
you could teach some code.
You could teach some code over the air. It'd be groovy. Listen, thank you very much for being here, guys.
Glenn, can I just take a moment to invite the community out to some recruiting events that we're having at Code Squad at Lena Park?
Okay, sure.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we're creating these events on the 24th, 30th.
Yeah.
And every Wednesday for the first 3 weeks in November from 6:30 to 8:30 at Lena Park. And you'll come out and we'll show you how to do a little bit of code and explain the process to you. And if you are interested, you can apply by going to our website, codesquad.org/apply.html.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to see you there. And if you know of anyone that's interested or who would love to change their positions and see, or maybe add skills to their current positions.
Yeah, that'd be great. Listen, thank you very much, guys, for being here. It's always a pleasure to meet people that are doing great things in our community, and this is where Boston Neighborhood Network shines its best, is when we bring people in to tell this. Oh, there it is.
Thank you,
Becky. Thanks for turning that on for us. Listen, gang, thanks an awful lot for being here with us. My name's Glenn Williams. You've been listening to Now and Then with Glenn. We'll dig you next time, folks. Have a great and safe afternoon and evening.